Welcome to Earth Eats. I'm Kate Young.
And partly what you don't want to do is too much amending because the tree might get too comfortable in its hole. You want the tree to be able to want to sort of go out and spread its roots out.
For today's show, we drop in on a community food day celebration in southern Indiana, where renowned poet and orchardist Ross Gay demonstrates the planting of a serviceberry bush. Kendra Brewer walks us through the making and canning of apple pie filling. And Stephanie Solomon talks about the importance of pie in building community connections and tackling the root causes of food insecurity. That's all coming up in the next half hour on Earth Eats. Hey, Alex, it looks like the farm bill's in the news again this week.
That's right, Kate. As Congress sets the table for reauthorizing the federal farm bill later this year, watchdogs and voters are bracing for possible cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. Spending for SNAP takes up about 80% of the farm bill's $100 billion funding. Lawmakers are looking for ways to roll back spending to pay for tax cuts that came through in last year's tax overhaul. Facing a growing federal deficit, House Speaker Paul Ryan told reporters late last year that he hoped to cut entitlement spending in 2018. SNAP is likely to be on Ryan's chopping block, along with disability benefits, Social Security, and Medicaid. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell stated last year that he did not expect to see entitlement cuts on the agenda for 2018. The USDA announced another change to SNAP in early December. It plans to give states more local control over the program, including more flexibility in how they administer it. The farm bill is only one of the ways that lawmakers could cut funding for food stamps. Trump's proposed budget for 2018 includes cutting SNAP by $193 billion over the next 10 years. SNAP helps around 40 million Americans buy food every month. Locally, concerned citizens are organizing to have their voices heard on the 2018 farm bill. Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly sits on the Agriculture Committee. He'll play a role in shaping the priorities of the new bill. The Food and Farm Coalition, organized by Hoosier Action and Mother Hubbard's Covered in Bloomington, met this week to strategize on how to get Senator Donnelly to prioritize their concerns about sustainable agriculture and SNAP benefits in the state of Indiana. Representatives from the coalition already spoke out at Donnelly's Farm Bill listening session back in November. They drew attention to the importance of SNAP benefits to people across the state experiencing food insecurity, and they brought up concerns of small farmers. In Donnelly's recap of the session, he mentioned support for small-scale agriculture commodity programs, but failed to touch on SNAP benefits or programs supporting small-scale farmers in sustainable agriculture. The crowd gathered at this week's Food and Farm Coalition meeting want to make sure that Donnelly gets the message this time. Kate Hespace is a community organizer with Hoosier Action. She spoke to the group about raising a collective voice.
We are facing unprecedented threats to an already broken system. More corporate control, massive threats to the social safety nets in the next 6 months. The farm bill is up, and Senator Donnelly sits on the Agricultural Committee and doesn't hear from people like you, not nearly as much as he hears from corporate agriculture. What would it take to build a Food and Farms coalition that is drawing more and more people in, advancing an agenda, and essentially building power?
One of the goals set at the meeting was to get Senator Donnelly in a room with 300 people to listen to their concerns about SNAP benefits and state support for small farmers and sustainable agriculture in Indiana. They hope to schedule the meeting for mid-February, when the senator returns to Indiana over the President's Day holiday. They spent a good part of the meeting mapping out strategies and steps to move them toward that goal. You'll find a link to the Food and Farm Coalition on our website, eartheats.org.
Whew, that was a lot going on around the farm bill.
Yep, and that'll continue. It's the next big thing for Congress.
Okay, well, thanks for keeping us up to date, Alex Chambers. We'll see you next week.
Sounds good, Kate.
Thanks also to Chad Bouchard for that Farm Bill report. National Food Day is celebrated annually during the week of October 24th. Food Day's roots reach back to 1975 when the Center for Science in the Public Interest initiated the event with the goal of raising awareness about the increasing industrialization of American agriculture, rising food prices, hunger, and the health crisis associated with American eating habits. Celebration of Food Day has been far from consistent over the years, fizzling out in the late 70s to be revived again in 2011. Once again, it was the Center for Science in the Public Interest with a grassroots campaign for better food policies and a celebration of healthy, affordable, sustainably produced food. Food Day now has a life of its own in communities across the U.S., and this fall we stopped into a community Food Day event in Bloomington, Indiana.
I'm Stephanie Solomon. I'm the Director of Education and Outreach at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard.
Food Day in Bloomington takes place at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, also known as The Hub. It's a community food resource center with a food pantry, community gardens, and cooking classes. For Food Day, The Hub partners with other local organizations, including the Monroe County Youth Council, Building a Thriving and Compassionate Community, Bloomington Food Policy Council, and the Bloomington Community Orchard.
We are in our fifth year, and generally, there's a tree planting. We often have a canning or a pie making demo. So there's an educational component. And then we lead into some kind of advocacy focus.
This year, the advocacy focus involved a look at dominant narratives around hunger. I wanted to know what narratives have to do with food insecurity.
The way that we talk about things affects the way that we act on them. So how we talk about hunger determines what our solutions to hunger are. And so we're going to really dive in and think about how in our culture do we talk about hunger and how does that lead to the solutions we have? And right now, what that often means is, people are hungry. We need to get food out the door. Let's have a food drive. But on a deeper level, we know that the roots of hunger are poverty and oppression. And so if we really want to address hunger in a holistic way, we need to dig deeper. And so we're going to have that conversation here at Food Day today.
I asked Solomon about the role of pie in their Food Day celebrations.
We have some pretty exciting traditions here at Mother Hubbard's for Food Day. We had a fruit focus because it's fall, it's harvest time. And that fruit focus led to pie baking, which led to a pie potluck, which really is one of the main draws, let's be honest. Everybody wants to taste some homemade pie. So we've gotten into the habit of having an educational component, having kids' activity, but making sure that all of it is centered around the pie, not for the pie itself, but because the pie gives us an opportunity to sit down together, eat something tasty, and get to know each other. More than the food, it's about the way that food allows us to build relationships and start conversations and tell our stories.
I checked in with a couple of volunteers at the pie intake station as people and pies were arriving.
So we are going to take all the pies and everyone writes down their names and the type of pie and then a note about the pie if there's an allergy. And we're just going to watch the pies and smell them and enjoy them.
What kind of pies do you have so far?
We have an apple tart here. We have a southern pecan pie. We have a white bean pot pie and a butternut pie.
I expected a lot of sweet pies, but I wonder what kind of savory pies are going to come today. I definitely didn't expect a white bean pie. I've never had that, but I'm excited to try it. Oh, here comes another pie.
What kind of pie did you bring?
A pecan pie.
Ooh, that looks amazing. I'm going to give it a sniff. Oh, it's still warm.
You fill one of these out with your name.
I popped into the kitchen where apples were getting prepped for the pie filling canning demonstration.
We're prepping the apples to go into the blanching bath, and then we're going to let the apples sit and while we prepare the rest of the apples.
What part are you doing?
I am slicing the apples.
And what's going on over here? I see a fancy contraption. What are you doing again?
I'm peeling the apples with a peeler.
Volunteer Courtney Zunica is using what some call an apple master. It's a hand crank gadget that spins an apple on a central spike while a blade follows the surface of the apple, peeling the skin in one long strip.
minute is almost up, so we'll be taking our apples out of the blanching water.
So the process is peeling the apples, slicing the apples, and coring them, and then putting them in a blanch bath for just a minute or so?
Yeah, once the water comes to a boil for about a minute.
And then what else is going to be added to them before they get canned?
And then we're going to mix them with our sugar syrup over here that has the apple pie seasoning in it, and then we'll put them into the canning jars.
There's one more step that we didn't mention, which is we're putting the slices into lemon juice, lemon water, so that they don't brown before we blanch them.
We'll come back to the kitchen for the rest of the process later in the show. Support for Earth Eats comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers. On Bloomington's east side corner of Pete Ellis and Longview, brunch every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. NeedMoreRoasters.com. Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeigner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. Outside now to an area surrounding the parking lot at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. They've planted what they call a food forest. In place of the typical ornamental shrubs and small trees used in landscaping, the hub makes use of the green space to grow food-producing perennials like blueberry bushes and persimmon trees. Today, Ross Gay will demonstrate how to plant a serviceberry bush. Ross Gay is an acclaimed poet at Indiana University. His most recent book of poetry, Catalog of Unabashed Gratitude, was a finalist for the 2017 National Book Award. But it's in his capacity as an orchardist that he leads this planting demonstration. Gay has been active with the Bloomington Community Orchard since its founding in 2010. He's planted his fair share of trees.
Saskatoon berry and a June berry. And does anyone know why it's called a service berry? Because when the plant bloomed in northern areas, that's when you knew you could have your services because the ground was thawed to dig the ground. Service berry. Anyway, it's magical, I think. So service berries are, they're a shrub. They can be a shrub or a tree. Service berry, Saskatoon berry, June berry. It's probably other names. They can be a shrub or a tree. So all I'm going to do is just do a little bit of prepping the hole, very minor. I'm just going to put a little bit of rock phosphate in there.
Gay sprinkles a handful of rock phosphate over the soil to stimulate root growth.
We're going to put in just a dash of compost to sort of, put goodies in the soil there. And then normally when you dig the hole, you'll just dig the hole and you'll leave the soil that you'll use the soil that you dug out to put back in the hole. And I think that soil is right here. I didn't dig this hole. I basically want to just get these roots nice and spread out. If it was a, look, there's a worm. If it was a tree, which this is not, a grafted tree, there would be a little knuckle here, and we'd want this knuckle to be above the soil line. But because this isn't a grafted tree, we don't have to worry about that in the same way. And it's nice to do it with two people because one person can make sure the plant's standing up straight. And as you kind of fill it up, you want to water it in. And this is going to help the soil kind of compact. again, just to reiterate, you would dig your hole, you would use your have your soil in a pile, and you would basically add your very few amendments, a little bit of amendments, and just replace the soil. That would be the soil that we put back in the hole. And partly what you don't want to do is too much amending, because the tree might get too comfortable in its hole. You want the tree to be able to want to sort of go out and spread its roots out. I'm going to water in again with a little jostling to let the air bubbles get out. In a little bit, we'll just put a nice thick layer of wood mulch around this. And there's service berries everywhere. That's the thing about a service berry. It's kind of exciting that we're planting a service berry, not only the poetic name and the beautiful fruit, but the fact that service berries are planted all over as like, what do you call it, like landscape trees? Yeah. So like on campus, late May, early June, you could go there and fill bags and bags and bags of fruit with service berries. And they are a delicious, really nutritious fruit. There's also service berries in front of the library, very productive trees. Service berries all around town. And, you know, lots of times people just don't know what they are. So they're an exciting plant to know. This is a planting of the service berry. Now you can do your own.
That was Ross Gay of the Bloomington Community Orchard demonstrating a fruit tree planting for Food Day 2017. You can learn more about the Bloomington Community Orchard at bloomingtoncommunityorchard.org or check the Earth Eats website for links, eartheats.org. Next, we head back into the kitchen for that canning demonstration with Kendra Brewer. You'll recall the fun hand crank apple peeling gadget.
And then bring it up. There's a little blade right here that catches the peel and takes it off.
After the apples are peeled, they get cored, sliced, and dropped directly into lemon water.
I've just put some lemon juice into this water to add that acidity, and that'll stop the oxidation and keep your apples looking beautiful and tasting beautiful.
Next, the apple slices hit the boiling water blanching bath.
And they only need to boil for about a minute once the water comes back up to a boil. And that's going to keep the texture and the flavor and the color of your apples really great throughout the whole canning process, all the way through to making your pie. So now I'm going to drain my apples and try to keep them warm over here. All right. And then the next step, as you can see in those handouts that you have, is going to be to put these hot apples into this hot syrup that we've prepared. And the syrup has, it's basically sugar and water and, you know, apple juice and some seasonings like cinnamon and nutmeg. On the recipe that you have a thing on there called clear gel. I don't have any clear gel here today, so I'm modifying the recipe in one very important way. I'm not adding a thickening agent. I'm not gonna add cornstarch instead of clear gel or arrowroot or tapioca. Because those things will denature, they will not stand up to the canning process. So that means that if you try to put, you know, cornstarch into your apple pie mixture and then put it through the heat of the canning process, the cornstarch is not going to thicken your pie filling for you, and it could actually cause some problems with the canning, making it unsafe. So don't ever add cornstarch or other, you know, vegetable thickeners to your pie filling if you don't have that clear gel. That's the only thing that the USDA recommends using right now for thickening your filling. What I'm going to do instead is when I actually, after these jars have been canned and we actually go to use them for a pie filling, we'll just add some cornstarch or a thickener then after the canning process. So I'm going to put my apples into my syrup here. And then we're gonna fill a jar. Something that's really important that you'll never wanna do is you'll never wanna put a cold item into a hot jar, or put a cold jar into a hot water bath, or put a hot jar onto a cold counter. You wanna always keep the temperature the same between what's going in the jar and what the jar's going on. So I'm going to take my jar lifter here. I've heated up the jars with the water so that I've got hot jars and hot water and hot filling all at the same time. And I'm making sure that the apple slices are coated really well in the sugar syrup here. I don't want any air in the jar. That could be problematic for your canning. You want to make sure that you've got, as you're filling it, and then after we fill it, we're going to go through and make sure that there's no air bubbles kind of trapped along the side. All right, so there's some things while I'm doing this that I'd like to talk about in terms of canning with you. This method that I'm doing right here is called a hot water bath canning method. And this is something that you can do with any fruits or vegetables that are high acid. So we've got apples, which have a certain amount of acid in them already, and we've added some lemon juice to make them even more acidic. You can can tomatoes, which can be high acidity, and you can add more acid to. You could hot water bath things like pickles or your dilly beans. Anything that's going to have a real high acid or vinegar content are safe to hot water bath can. Anything that doesn't have that acidity, say you wanted to preserve a tomato sauce that wasn't quite high enough acidity, you would need to pressure cook that. So we've got a pressure canner up there that you can see, and that actually cans things at a much higher temperature and pressure and makes those foods safe. For any foods that you're canning, though, you're going to need to make sure that you're using a recipe that either comes from the USDA or a cooperative extension service. You don't just want to take a recipe off of your favorite, you know, food blog online and then decide to can that, because you're not sure then that you've got the proper acidity and you could risk getting something like botulism. Botulism happens when you don't have an acidic enough environment. That's why we're so concerned about the acidity in the hot water bath canner. Are there any questions about that?
Did you catch all that? The hot water bath method of canning is perfect for high acid foods like fruit and plain tomatoes, or foods with a lot of vinegar like pickles. Low acid foods like vegetables, soups, or sauces, those need to be pressure canned. Once you add garlic or onions or anything else to your tomatoes or tomato sauce, you need to pressure can. And always follow a canning recipe from the USDA or from a cooperative extension. We'll have links at eartheats.org.
On your recipe there, you'll notice that it recommends leaving about an inch of headspace, and that's actually an important thing to follow. I've got about an inch here between the top level of my solids and my liquids and the top of the jar itself. And that's important because that will cause the proper seal to form. You might not get a proper seal if you don't leave the recommended amount of headspace, and it's different for each recipe. For canning tomatoes, it's often about half an inch. So now the thing that I'm going to want to do is take my air bubbles out of my jar, just like I talked about a little earlier. I've got a little thin thing here to do that with. And I'm just going to run that around the kind of perimeter of the jar here. And now I'm going to wipe the top of my jar off, because I don't want anything at all getting in the way of my seal with my lid here. All right, and I've wiped the rim of my jar. And now I'm not going to want to crank this on too tight because I don't want to warp the lid here, but I'm going to kind of, what they say, they call it finger tightening, so that it holds the lid in place while it's in the hot water bath canner. And then I'm going to go and put this into the canner, and I'm going to fill all my jars, and then I'm going to process, you know, let these things boil for the amount of time listed on the recipe, which is 25 minutes for a quart of apple pie filling. After they're done, you'll take them out and put them onto your towel again, and then you're actually going to take this screw lid off, let them cool and dry without the screw lid on. And then you'll know that your canning has been successful when you hear this little pop that'll happen as they cool down. They'll suck the top of that lid in, and then you'll be able to turn this thing upside down without the screw top, and it will stay in place. And then you know you've got a proper seal, and you can store that jar for about a year.
I like that idea. It's a way to eat local year-round. During apple season in the fall, prep some fresh apples for pie filling and can it in quart jars. When you're ready to make a pie, whether it's the dead of winter or early summer, all you gotta do is make the pie crust. It brings you one step closer to pie. I'm always in favor of that. We've got recipes for all of it
flaky pie crust, spiced pie filling, and how to safely preserve it, all on our website, eartheats.org. And that wraps up our tour of Food Day at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. If you were hoping to hear more about what it looks like to change the dominant narratives around hunger and to take on the root causes of food insecurity, you're in luck. We'll have Stephanie Solomon back on our show, along with Amanda Nicky, President and CEO of Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, for a conversation about emergency food assistance and moving from a charity model to a social justice model. So stay tuned to Earth Eats and go ahead and subscribe to our podcast. That way you won't miss a single episode. Production support comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers. On Bloomington's east side, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview. Brunch every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. NeedMoreRoasters.com. A shout out to the Earth Eats team for everything you do to keep us going. That includes Aobon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Daniel Orr, Indiana University Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Ross Gay and to everyone at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young, and thanks for tuning in to Earth Eats today. We'll be back next week.